One of the most powerful things of doing group sessions like this is that, you know, let's just say, Kat, you're asking a question, and then I can make it relevant to product-based, service-based, B2B, B2C in that capacity. So feel free to, I really like the way Brett's done that or Dennis has done that. How would I apply that to me? Or I'm thinking about applying it to me this way. Can I just give you my version? And we can go bouncing forward back that way at the same time. What I will notice is that as we go through the five steps, some of you will nail that step quicker than other steps, right? So you might find step one for some of you might be challenging, and step one might have been really, really easy. Step two might be easy for the others, but then challenging for the person who was easy in step one. So you're going to go through different stages when you think simple, easy, got it. Other stages where it's like, fuck, I just can't get it right, or I don't know how it applies right, or how can I apply that to an email, or if I've got a social media private message, how will I incorporate that into that context? Can I even incorporate it? I think of a different strategy. So these are the things you're going to come across as well. One thing that's always also going to come is whenever we create change, right, what often happens is the world conspires against us. Just nod your head if you know what I mean by that. All right, and it conspires against us in lots of different ways. It's not that it doesn't want you to succeed, right? It's not this, oh, it wasn't meant to be crap. The world spies against you because what you're doing is you're creating a bigger world than the world you live in right now, and it's uncomfortable. Like, my theory is you only walk into obstacles in life when you're moving forward. So if you're sitting still, right, you're never going to come up against any resistance because you're in your comfort zone. When you decide to take two steps forward, you're going to walk into a wall, you're going to walk into a person, you're going to walk into something because you're changing. So that's a good thing when you're hitting obstacles. The reason why this is condensed into 4 weeks, the reason why these sessions are only 3-4 days apart is because it's going to force you to deal with the shit that you deal with every day. Things are going to get busy, personal stuff's going to come up, clients are going to want to move meetings, you're going to sit and go, fuck, I haven't got any session, the Zoom call's tomorrow. This is just your time to step up and work against the world to make sure that you create the new world that you want that works with you. Your old world will conspire against you. Your new world will work with you. So if you ever find that you're running out of time or things are hard to implement, it's meant to be, and all of you will feel that at one stage, that's okay. If you rock up to a session and you've only done 20% of that topic, rock up even with 20% of it done, we'll fix the rest. Who gets that showing up is 90% of life. It's beautiful. So we're all going to work at different speeds. And the third thing I want to talk about is comparisons. Comparisons is probably the one thing that usually creates internal dialogue and self-talk for most people. Like, you might see someone in the group having a win before you and go, shit, I haven't had that yet. Or someone else create a, you know, Ari, you went up and put in the Facebook group a pretty good, you know, outline of your whole process. And some of you might think, fuck, he's done a lot there. That sounds really, really good. Mine's not even close to that. And we play the comparison game, all right? We work at our own speed. That's the key thing around this, right? We work at our own speed, use the information others are sharing, and I appreciate everyone who's been into the Facebook group already who shared stuff or asked questions because it's enabling us to learn from each other and say, how do I apply that into my industry? Okay? You guys all cool with that? Give us a quick thumbs up if that all makes sense. Quick agenda item. So one of the first things I want to go through is, and this will be more relevant sometimes as we go through step two, step three, step four, and step five, is a quick recap of what we've done and any questions on where we're at right now before we move forward and any wins we may have had that we can share so other people can say, if you did this, I did this and it worked, what else can I do? So, just quickly, has anyone had any challenges or successes in the last 5 or 7 days since last time that they want to quickly share? Anything, whether it be a line, a phrase, a strategy they use that you felt, and it might not be a total sale, but it might mean, I felt I got less of an objection. I booked an appointment from it. I felt the energy was different. The conversation was different. But what people asked was different to what they would have when they normally asked. Who'd like to share something just quickly?
Pete, for me, just verbalising, writing down that script, which I posted.
Yep.
For me, that gives me a lot more clarity going into a call. And I even numbered the yeses because I just want to kind of challenge myself to see how many yeses
I saw that. That's great. That's awesome. So it gave you a bit more confidence. Yeah, beautiful.
Just I know when I jump on the call, that initial, I'm going to know exactly what I'm going to say. I've done it in the past, but never to that detail.
Yeah, and just remember, when we do that, let's not use it as a crutch for a script. Let's use it as our prompt. Now, you know, after a while, you'll get very good. Like, I've shot a million videos in my life, so I can read like a teleprompter and it sound really comfortable and confident. So if you're at that stage, that's great. But really, highlight keywords or key phrases. You might have your script, then you might chunk. If you've got like 7 points in your script, you might chunk one or two keywords to help you remember what to actually say. That makes sense? Beautiful. Sean, you're going to say something as well. What's something you want to share, buddy? Just unmute yourself.
Here we go. Sorry, my button wasn't working. All good.
The old mute button.
I was hitting the microphone. Anyway, I picked up a thing on Facebook
somewhere.
Yeah, mate, I've been relegated. My office is at home. My wife's in the office making calls today, and my young fella's home from school, so that's out. So I'm down in the workshop, mate.
So, love it.
Here we go. But, I had a couple of wins, which I put on Facebook, I spoke about, and that was, I guess, lowering buyer's resistance by recognising both traits in two different people.
Yes.
So I had a wife who wanted everything in the new house. Anything I had to offer, she pretty much wanted. Mm-hmm. And I had a husband who said, no, let's pull up on the budget. So by working with both of them, tending to both those needs, lowered their resistance, and I was able to get the sale on lots of extras on a job that we didn't have before. So it was good.
Awesome. That's good, man. That's really, really good. Love that. And that's the thing, right? What you'll only learn is the quicker you use something, the quicker you know whether it works or whether it doesn't work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So one thing I want to make sure we never do, Dean Tate, is have perfection paralysis, right? It's got to be perfect. I don't know if this is right just yet. You will iterate and you'll figure out what is right as you start. Got it? You'll iterate and you'll figure out, is this right? How does this look, et cetera, as we go through. So let's rock and roll right now, okay? Let's rock and roll. So what I want to quickly do is a quick recap to start with. Okay. The first thing we spoke about was the consumer insights model. Just give me a quick thumbs up if that was relevant to you guys. Understanding we've got to play above the line, not below the line. It's how people think will create how they feel, then how they feel will dictate the results that they achieve. So it will dictate the actions they achieve. The actions will then dictate your results. So it's not focusing on what I want to say here to convince them to buy. How do I need to make them feel so they feel compelled to want to take the next step? I repeat that. It's not what do I need to say to get people to buy or to book an appointment or download my ebook or whatever my lead magnet is. It's what do I need to say? How do I need to change the way people think and feel so when they feel that way, they'll feel compelled to take that next step? All we want to do is take people down the decision-making continuum from one step to the next, to the next, to the next. So everything you're thinking about, what should I write? What should I type? How do I articulate this? What imagery should I use if it's a social media post? Is what do I want people to think and feel that's going to enable them to want to take the next step? And that's the key framework that we want to utilize. So it's constantly playing above the line as opposed to below the line. We also talked about the first part of any communication, whether it be social, written on email, whether it's telephone, whether it's face-to-face, is what do we need to do to lower buyer's resistance? Now, we know there's two mindsets a human being has, right? Before I want to buy anything, there's going to be a level of resistance. If you use like a thermometer, there'll be anywhere from a scale of, you know, 1 degree to 100 degrees resistance. If it's a very cold lead, a cold customer, they don't know much about you, they're more likely to get 100 degrees resistance. If, let's just say, David recommended me to Ari, right, then David may have done 50% of the sale for me, so I come to Ari with only 50 degrees buyer's resistance. What I want to assume is that there's always some level of buyer's resistance there. Unless someone walks up to you and says, hey, how you going, Sean? Mate, I need to book this in. This is the date. This is the time. I don't care what it costs me. Here's my credit card. Let's rock and roll. Even then, I wouldn't just take their credit card because sometimes what people want is not what they need. Right, but that would be the best case scenario of no buyer's resistance. So my first goal, now the opposite to buyer's resistance is, of course, buyer's acceptance. Now, the key to this is normally we're trying to gain acceptance of people, right? It's our natural humanistic instinct to want to win people over. We want to make sure that they feel like they like what we have. Now, the problem with that is if we are trying to win people over and we're trying to gain acceptance, we're going to come across to resistance. So when resistance is high, acceptance is low. So to get acceptance up, it's very hard to get acceptance up when resistance is up. So what we need to do is focus on lowering buyer's resistance first, releasing the handbrake, taking the foot off the foot brake, taking the car out of park and putting it into drive. Then we have that magical word called permission to gain buyer's acceptance. So my whole philosophy to start with is what do I need to do to lower buyer's resistance? That's the first part, all right? To lower buyer's resistance. So everything in the introduction is a lowering buyer's resistance strategy. There's nothing worse than someone either writing something to you, saying something to you face-to-face, and it puts them off. It was really funny. My mum, she's just turned 70 6 months ago, and she moved from Sydney back to Perth on her birthday. And she works, she does sales, right? She works in a bed shop. God bless her. And she loves it. She keeps a book of every sale, her KPIs, her data, everything. Right. And she's like, she rings me, she goes, hey, Pete, I had a really good day today. I had 5 customers in the shop all day, 4 of them bought, and I made $15,000 worth of sale. The owner was in at the other shop, and he made a donut. Like, she's so proud and kicking his butt. She's got all her stats, she's got all her data. She knows everything. Like, seriously, she's just, and if I say one little thing to her, she'll go, oh, you know that thing you said? I actually used that and it worked. Like, it's just, it's a crack up. You know, she's amazing. She's really cool. And Annette had an idea to stop by her shop just yesterday. We bought a couple. She's a, loves her cakes and her sweets. And first thing I did, she walked in and she showed me her spreadsheet. She just got off the phone and she just put the cursor top left-hand corner. It was like $33,000 worth of sales. Anyway, there's like a couple walked in. She got off the phone and she walked straight up to the people and she just said, hi, my name's Veronica. When you're finished looking, you're ready, want any information, just come and grab me. And what she didn't do was jump all over down their throat. She literally just said, hi, my name's Veronica. Once you're finished looking around, you want any questions, information, anything, just come and grab me. I'll just be over here. And the great thing about that, it wasn't a, how can I help you? Right? It was the sole focus. What she's really, really good at is just lowering buyer's resistance very, very quickly and very, very easily. So there's a couple of strategies that we played with, right? The first strategy we did, and Ari, I know you've done this very good, you're counting your yeses in your whole process, was starting the call with yes momentum, right? Just getting that yes momentum happening. So, you know, we can create a yes as quickly as we can. Now, let me clarify this. A yes can be an agreement. Yeah, I can get you to say no, but it's still an agreement. Right? Hey, Mike, we don't want it to rain this weekend, do we? Now, he's going to say no, but that's an agreement. So a no can be an agreement. Got it? What we want to do is get an agreement as quick as we can. So what we did talk about, if we're making a call, we want to use the is it strategy. So if I'm calling Dean, he picks up the phone, goes, this is Dean. Oh, is that Dean, is it? The automatic knee-jerk reflex response is to say yes. Got it? The automatic reflex response is to say yes. Now, even if someone answers the phone with their name, you still want to say, oh, that's Dean, is it? And they go, yes, it is. Now, the tone. Who's heard the saying, it's not what you say, but it's how you say it? Right? This is the critical component. This is why you don't want to stick to reading a script because you lose tonality with script, right? So it's, oh, is that Dean, is it? Yeah, Dean, Pete here from the Scalable Sales System. And then we use the pause. Because when you pause, what does it mean? somebody else's turn to speak. Is that Dean? Dean, Pete here from the Scalable Sales System. Oh, hi, Dean. So has anyone used that at all? Has anyone used the is it? And they said yes, and you pause. Anyone used the pause yet? Just quick show of hands if anyone has. If you haven't, that's fine. Mike, you have. How did it go for you, Mike? Just unmute yourself. What did you notice when you used the pause?
Yeah, it works because you have that void and people feel the need to fill that void.
Yeah.
It's a similar term when I've done before in in interviewing people. So in the army, I was an exploiter, so it just means an interrogator. And
who would love Mike to interrogate them?
But it's not a menacing process. It's just when you speak, you don't give any visual or verbal recognition, and then people feel the need to keep. And it's amazing what people will then vomit. And because you know, when we're talking, we're all doing this. Oh yeah, I get this. You don't do that, and you just look at people, and it's that pause. It's either auditory or visual.
Yeah, yeah, beautiful, awesome. And Sean, you use it as well?
Yeah, mate, I found I already used it when I'd say, this is Sean, I'd already pause. What I'm finding now more, though, is I'm inserting that pause after I put something to somebody. Instead of me wanting to follow on and tell them more and tell them more, I'm just stopping. You know, just it's the old, learn to shut up.
It's good. www.zipit.com. The less you say, the more impact it has. Yeah, we really want to get, and to lower buyer's resistance, one of the key critical factors is get the customer involved in the conversation as quick as we can. I'm sure we've all been on the back end of a telemarketer where they go into their 30-second spiel and you just can't get a word in and you just like, you just want to hang up, right? The quicker they can engage, and it can't be, and you get the opposite effect of that, right? When telemarketers go, oh, is that Ms. Lakevich? Yes, it's Ms. Lakevich, just wondering if you want to reduce your power bill. Yes, I do. Great. And do you feel you spend too much? Yes, I do. And would you like, they're forcing me into a corner to say yes is when I know what they're trying to say. Who's ever felt that before? Like, it's just, that's the worst, oldest script you can ever have in your life. So you don't want to go to the other end of the spectrum as well. So is that Brett? Is that yesterday's Brett, Pete here from Prime Practice? Oh, g'day, Pete. How are you going? When we're receiving the call, remember, what's the word we want to finish with? Our name. Thanks for calling the Fat Loss Manifesto. This is Ari. Has anyone used their name last when they answer the phone? Have you noticed people start to use your name more than they used to? Yep, Sean, yes, Kat, yes, great. Again, what that does, it lowers buyer's resistance and it makes people engage with you. These are all the little 1 to 5%ers. They get someone from 90 degrees down to 80 degrees. But at 80 degrees, conversations are different. People respond differently than they do at 90 degrees resistance. So these are all the little strategies we want to have in there. So receiving the phone call. Thanks for calling Peter from, thanks for calling company name, this is Peter. So let's have that statement when we first start. If we're making the call, is the is it strategy. Is everyone comfortable with that component? Does anyone want to talk about any of that? Have you got that embedded already? Are you making it automatic? Have you changed it within your company? Have you changed it within your business? Have you made sure that you're always using that?
Yeah, Pete, just a quick question.
Yeah, mate.
If you use a virtual receptionist, you can probably, you pretty much ask them to, you can write a script for them to ask, eh? And then they can, when they screen it to me, I already know their name and everything like that. And when they transfer, I can pretty much talk to them.
Yeah, I will do that. I will do that completely. I'm going to take you back to 1992, right? And actually, we didn't have the rotary phone. We had the push-button phones, but it still had the coil connected to the phone, right? And it was like a long phone. And I actually had a bit of paper sticky taped to the phone, right? Sticky taped to the phone and said, welcome to BC The Body Club. This is your name. And it was highlighted and stuck to the phone. So when they looked at the phone, they picked it up, the script was on the phone. So when you picked it up, it was like, because my gym was called BC The Body Club. Don't ask me why, but it just was. Welcome to BC The Body Club. This is, and it just had your name. And that's how everyone had to answer the phone. Right? So I even stuck it on the phone, and one phone, and two phones reception. One was highlighted yellow, one was highlighted orange. Every week, I would change the color of the highlighter because people become poster blind. And after a while, you just don't see things. So if you move a poster an inch to the left, lower or higher, it becomes more prevalent in the human brain to recall, retain it, and see it as something they want to consciously utilize. So I'd shift it a bit lower, a bit higher, change the colouring. So yes, if you've got any team members, definitely impart that into it.
Yeah,
100%. Good. Great. The next thing we talked about was the paradigm shift. All right. Has anyone played with the paradigm shift? In other words, the paradigm shift, the premise of that is, in a normal conversation, you are positioned as the chaser and your customer is the chasee. And they know that. You are trying to get their business. They get it. They feel it. What we want to do is shift that perception, right, and make it that they are engaging you, chasing you, so they now become the chaser and you are the chasee. That's a critical paradigm I'm trying to create and frame in the first part of our introduction. Again, whether it's written or whether it's verbal. So the key here was the switch. And the phrase that we want to use here is the reaching out phrase. Has everyone felt comfortable embedding that component into their process? Now, what we can do just with that is, depending on the context of the conversation, I tend to say, hey, listen, before we start getting the nitty-gritty, what made you reach out? The reason that little statement softener makes a difference, when I say, before we get to the, it's almost like we haven't started yet, but what made you reach out? They don't feel like this is part of the sales process. They volunteer information quicker and easier because it's just more relaxed in conversation. Like some people go, okay, now's the sales process. He's got his salesman hat on, she's got a salesman hat on. But when you say, hey, just before we start, what made you reach out? What made you reach out and reply to the email list? If you send an email database out, right, or an SMS text out, hey, what made you reach out and reply back to the email that I sent out to everybody? What made you reach out and respond to the Facebook Live that I did? Can you see the context we can use this same principle, whether you've just done an EDM drop, an SMS drop, whether you've done a Facebook Live or you've done some sort of video? You can utilize the same reaching out, the switch strategy to effectively change the paradigm, which is how they view us. I want them to view us that they are reaching out to us. They almost become the patient, we become the doctor. When you can get that concept into their mind, they will view you through a different lens. We want to change the perception of everything. And the quicker we change perception, the more they will, you know, verbally undress in front of you and let you know what's going on inside, which is what we want. So does that help just put into context of how you can use that reaching out strategy, whether it's through social media, email, telephone, face-to-face? It's the, hey, what made you reach out? Now, I know, Brett, for you guys at Prime, we use the word invitation. Because sometimes you'll send an invitation, or a third party might suggest they come to one of your workshops. Because your first touch point with a lot of people is going to be you presenting on stage, and a partner has invited them to come along. So, how would you reach out and accept that invitation and reach out and book in or come along or register for? Right. So, I think from memory, you guys do a pre-call before the event. You ring them, prime them up. Pardon my French, pardon the pun, but you prime them up. Before they come to the event. So it's what made you, what was it about the invitation that made you reach out and book in? So it could be, what was it about the invitation? And all of you guys can use this. You know, Kat, you could use this as well with your multi-level marketing. You might have, you know, events or webinars that you run and you invite people to bring people along. What made you accept the invitation and reach out to Ken tonight, to book in tonight, to register for tonight, to register your team for tonight? To bring your partner with you.
Could you also, when people, sorry to interrupt, but just quickly, could you say what made you say yes to the call? Because a lot of what we do are one-on-one biz presentations where someone's asked someone to get on a call with me. So how would I work that? Can I just say what made you say yes to the call to learn more?
So just get the context right. I'm already in your downline. I invite someone else to book in a time for you and they accept.
Yeah. Yeah, and I share the business opportunity with the downline and the potential.
Perfect. Yes. Yes, you can use accept. Like accept is a part. What made you accept the invitation from Pete for us to have this session together? What made you say yes to it? reach out and kind of book in for it. Sometimes it's really funny, right? Sometimes the context of the grammar can be incorrect, but just using the language, the word makes a difference.
Yeah.
If I ask everyone a quick question right now, when's the best time now to start something?
Now.
Now, just rewind what I just said to you. When's the best time now to start something? Grammatically, it doesn't make sense, but the answer, I just pre-framed the word now. It was a massive pre-frame to get your mind thinking now's the time. So you can still throw the word word reach out if you want, Kat, and just see what the response is and trial accept, trial yes, trial reach out with accepting yes and just see what the response is. I'm always playing with a consumer-led mindset. So I'm going to say yes now, and when you come back next on Thursday or next week, and if you've used it, let the group know, hey, for me, I'm finding that when I use, what made you, accept the invite from Pete and kind of reach out and say yes to this session? And then that one, I just use all three. The key is just own the colloquialism of the language. It's just got to be every day. It's got to feel comfortable for you. There might be a phraseology or a term that I use that you just go, but Pete can get away with saying it. I just don't. It's not me. It's not my personality. Then don't use it. All right. What we're not here is create 12 different Petes. Just asking that. One of them is enough. You want to create the first you. All right. Why is everyone laughing? You should be somebody in your head going, no. All right. So create the first you and use that way. So. Sorry, go ahead, Dan.
The weird thing is, just before we came online, I just had a call from this Geraldine lady. I spoke to her last June with some work, and then obviously she must have just reached out just before we got online. And I don't know why, so I'm going to flick her an email now and say, thanks for reaching out. I'm not asking an email because she asked me to send her an email. I'll find out what's going on, and, it's just funny. I haven't heard from her about a year. And then, all of a sudden she wants rates and prices and – I might just flick her an email and see what's going on.
Yeah, I don't think you might. I think you will.
Yeah.
You know what's really weird, guys, and this happens every time, and it may have already happened to you in the past with something else, but whenever you start something like this, like the Sales Accelerator program, just consciously thinking about a process or starting something, you start to get leads or opportunities pop in. Or did anyone notice that? All of a sudden you see an opportunity, maybe it was always there, but your filter wasn't right to see it, and now your filter's open and you're seeing the opportunity. Just a quick hands up. Did that happen anyone in the last week? Has anyone noticed? Yeah, it's just weird. Like, you can almost join this, not do anything for 4 weeks, and something will happen that's positive. Not that you're going to do that, but it's just be aware of these opportunities. So, Dan, with that one right now, this is a great opportunity to utilize this right now. So I love the fact that you've seen that. It's crazy scary, but it just means you're in the right place at the right time. So just before we kick off and start, just before we get into the nitty-gritty, just use your language around this. What made you reach out? And now, the tone of curiosity is critical here, right? The tone of curiosity is really critical here. What made you reach out today? What made you reach out to make sure you're in this room today? What made you reach out? And you can use the resource, the medium that they use. So what made you reach out and send me a private message? What made you reach out and book in? What made you reach out and kind of listen to Pete and decide, you know what, I'll see what Kat's got to say? What made you reach out and challenge your own thinking about multi-level marketing? So everyone says it's kind of a lot of bullshit. What made you reach out and go, I'm going to be open to it? See what we're doing there? What made you reach out and say, I'm going to be open to it? I've just pre-framed, they are now open to it. You know, what made you reach out and go, you know what, you've probably tried 100 fitness things before. What made you reach out and go, today's the day I'm going to do something about it? What was it? Now I've just got the old, I have tried it before. Why are you any different to anyone else? But that's kind of the personalization part of it. Quick question.
Was that my Pete?
Yeah.
When it's simply just an inbound phone call and you don't know where it's come from, is it literally a case of what made you reach out and call me today? Is it? Even though there is no anything before that call.
Great. This is a really good question, and I don't think I covered it last Monday, so I want to cover it now. If you don't know the source of lead or source of inquiry, ask up front. Does that make sense? So with you, Sean, is it an inbound call or are you calling someone back?
No, so they're always majority of mine are inbound calls or inbound emails. But yeah, a lot of them are inbound calls. I don't know where they've come from. At the moment, I'm simply saying, no worries, Pete. Whereabouts did you hear about us from, mate? But instead, should I be rephrasing that as, look, thanks for reaching out. What's the reason you called us today? Or
beautiful.
Do I want to know where it came from? I'm not sure.
Beautifully. I've got a rule with this. Before I give that rule, I just heard an Aussie-ism that I really want to strip out of everybody because it actually can have a negative
impact. Not bad for them.
It could have a negative impact in what we do, okay? What I mean by the Aussie-ism, and I think it's, I don't know if it's Carl Barron. A comedian does a skit on it, right? Aussies are really good at telling people what they're not doing. How you going? Not bad. Where you going? Nowhere. What are you up to? Not much. Look at this. Ah, no worries. Everything's a no, right? And he does this skit where he goes on for about, you know, 10 different things that we always say no to in some. Has anyone seen that skit? I think it's Carl Barron or something like that. It's a crack up. What I need you to understand is that the brain works in pictures. So what the brain can't do is create a picture of not doing something. So what it does, it gets rid of the negative connotation and you're left with that one negative aspect. This is why if I ever say to you, you know, guys, you know, Sean, don't forget to get some milk on the way home. You pull into the driveway and what do? Ah, shit, I forgot the milk, right? Because what your brain has done, it can't create a picture of not forgetting the milk. So it's got rid of the word don't. And what are you left with? Forget the milk. So now you've trained your brain to forget the milk. You know, don't forget to call me tomorrow. What are you going to do? You're going to forget to call me tomorrow because you get rid of don't, you forget to call me. So you want to use positive framing like remember. Don't tell people what you're not doing. Tell people what you are doing. Don't tell people what you can't do. Tell them what you can do. So it's always you want to positively frame up where you're at. So instead of a no worries, my pleasure. I'd love to. Absolutely. For sure. Let me answer that for you. Does that make sense? So let's try to get rid of the no. Who's a no worries person? Yeah, okay, great. It's just it's an Aussie thing. We all do it. Let's try use positive framing instead of negative framing. The second thing is when you ask a question, my key component, if it's hard to find relevance for the consumer, you've got to give relevance to the question before you ask the question. Like, I remember when I first started out, my manager used to always say to me, Pete, you always got to find out, how did I find out about the health club? It's when I started in fitness sales. So, how'd you find out about the club? And it was like, I wanted to know because I wanted to know, you know, what marketing was working, and but it meant nothing for the customer. And I believe everything that you say needs to mean something to the customer, right? Everything that you say needs to mean something to the customer, otherwise you shouldn't be saying it. You're just filling for the sake of filling. So I will frame up why I'm asking the question. Hey, Sean, just to make sure I know exactly where to start, how much information to give you, how much do you know about us or how did you find out about us? So I know exactly how much information to give you and where to start. How did you find out about us and how much do you know about us? Does that make sense? So I'm just giving relevance to the question. So in your notes after paradigm shift, I've got starting point and it says, how much do you know about us? There you can also include, how did you find out about us? Does that help everybody? Perfect. So just so I can give you as much, just so I know exactly how much to give you and where my starting point is, how did you find out about us? How much do you actually know about us? Oh, listen, just what a friend told me. I Googled you. I've been following you on social media. I was at an event and someone talked about you. I saw your sign. Your Facebook ad's following me everywhere. Got it. Okay. And how much do you actually know about us? Well, just what I saw on the video, just what I saw on your website, just what such and such told me about you. All right, great. Well, because you know this much and you need to insert this much, this is the personalization part of it, right? So because you everything you know about us is kind of what you saw on the website or the video or the Facebook Live or just what Pete told you about us or just what you saw on Google, because you don't really know that much, because you only know a little bit, listen, because you've seen some of the stuff before and you know one of my clients, let me tell you what we're going to do today. Got it? Let me tell you what we're going to go through. And then we go into our frame-up. So that personalization component massively lowers buyer's resistance, because now I'm hearing someone conversing with me based on the level that I'm entering the decision-making continuum. If you look at 0 and 10, you've got people are in the decision-making process. You need to figure out where you need to match the entry point with their entry point. If they're at a 2 and you come in at a 4, there's a mismatch, there's a gap. You're too far ahead of them and they'll feel you as salesy and pushy. If they're at a 4 and you come in as a 2, then you get frustrated that you're not moving quick enough. Has anyone been frustrated in the sales process before? Because you are further along the path and you feel like, stop with the sales shit. I know that stuff. I just want the answer to this question. But they are so stuck on script and process, they're not acknowledging where you are. So we need to enter the decision-making continuum at the same level where they are. Ari.
Hey, just a quick question. Are these easy to apply to an EDM? So with the starting point, you know, if you're saying how much do you know about us, I'm assuming we're going to try and get an email response and a conversation going?
Yes. So when you say EDM, have you done an EDM dump to an audience or people replied through an email on a website inquiry?
I've got a pre-made nurture sequence.
Yeah.
Basically just emails going out weekly. I want to cut that down, right down to just their sales sequence and then have the nurture sequence follow afterwards.
Yes. If you want to get really funky, your nurture sequence should be specific to where the lead came from.
Okay.
So if you've got three different sales funnels, right, you need to have a nurture sequence for each sales funnel.
For each one.
Absolutely. Because some of it might just you know, you might do an opt-in for a Facebook Live, right? And download my 3 secrets to how to drink beer, eat chocolate, and lose weight. Right? this is your first time seeing me, and you've never seen this before. Download this, because what it's going to do is this. Then that'll have a thank you page that says, hey, I know, thanks for downloading the 3 secrets too. What I want to give you, I've got a 3-step video series that actually talks you through that step by step. It's normally $97. I'm going to give it to you for $7. Get it now. That is a different sequence to someone who's been in your funnel for a while.
Yep.
Does that make sense? So, guys, if you've watched my 3-step video series on how to do this, I'm going to offer you this, and that should go through a different sequence. If you haven't, you should get that. So they should have 3 different sequences. Therefore, because they're in different stages in the decision-making continuum.
Yeah.
So if the first sequence had come in at a 3 and the second sequence is a 5, your job to that 3 is just to get them to the 5. Then the 5 nurture sequence gets them to the 7. And the 7 nurture sequence gets them to book in for a one-on-one consultation for you where you convert them. Because that process is just lowering their buyer's resistance. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. So it's just a question of, you know, this can be used, but I've just got to rethink where and, you know, definitely the salt, the thank you page. As soon as you said thank you page, that's probably the best place for this for me to go on the thank you page.
Yeah, I would agree. And remember, guys, when you do opt-ins, and I'm talking a little bit about marketing funnel right now, but it might be relevant for a lot of you. When you're doing opt-ins, the key is just to get them to opt-in. So it might just be name and email. But then second and third party inertia sequence could be asking for more information. Could be asking for a phone number. Could be asking for what city do you live in, what postcode. Like, you can gain more data the more trust you have from people. If you've got an opt-in that has 4 questions, name, email, phone number, business name or industry or postcode or anything like that, the more statistics will tell you, the more barriers you have, the lower the opt-in. So the more things you ask people to give you when they don't know you, the more likely they are to not do it. So if you just give them 1 or 2 things, and as your relationship builds, as they get to a 4 out of 10 in the decision-making continuum, you can ask for more information then. The key is to lower buyer's resistance as much as we can. Good. Does that help? Is that relevant for a few of you guys out there? Brilliant. Good. So now we've led into that, right, okay, because you know this much, not much, a little bit, because you've done your research, because you know someone who's actually working with me right now, let me tell you what we'll go through today. And then that leads us up to the frame up. The goal here, my goal is to have lowered buyer's resistance by at least 30%. right? That's my goal, is to reduce buyer's resistance by at least 30%. You should feel a shift in the energy, in the conversation, in their tonality, in their acceptance levels. They should have used, they may have told you something personal about themselves. I'm looking for that shift. If I've got that, then I know I've got my momentum. If I haven't quite nailed that yet, then I've got to be really conscious that I'm not pushing the conversation too quickly. Got the idea? Awesome. Any questions on that so far? Has that helped answer or helped plug a few gaps for some of you? Just give us a thumbs up if it's plugged a couple of little gaps for you from what we've done in the last week. For some of you, has it solidified what you've put down? Thumbs up if it's kind of solidified what you kind of put down and made it more comfortable. Great. So what I want to do now is I want to spend the rest of our time together listening to what you've done, giving you feedback, getting others to ask questions on how that can be relevant to you, and spend the next 45 minutes doing that. You guys cool with that? Beautiful. Who would like to go first? I don't mind who, but has anyone got a specific, either we can do two things, a specific question about one of those things we've just covered, or who would like to kind of go through what they've put together and me just give you feedback? Either one of those two is fine. So either put your hand up if you've got a quick question about something we've just done, or if you're happy, if that's not you, don't put your hand up. Put your hand up if you want to be the first person to kind of share what you've done so far. We'll start with questions. Anyone got a question first? Mike's got a question. Fire away, mate.
Wait, it's everything makes sense except where do you put the memory anchor in?
Right. The memory
anchor, yes. All of them are awesome, but then the memory anchor has to be inputted there. So, and it feels like if you place it, then it's sort of you're going back to the first step.
Yes. So put the memory anchor at the end because you embed the memory anchor based on the source or lead of inquiry. So it could come in the starting point. Hey, Mike, just to know exactly how much information to give you and kind of where to start, how much do you actually know about us? Was it just from you jumping on the website last night when you reached out to us, or had you known something about us before then? So I'd put the memory anchor in then. Was it just when you reached out last night? So most of the time, your memory anchor is going to come up in the starting point section. Got it? Now, the caveat to that, have you ever had those people that when they first start the conversation just go into a dump? Just hands up who's had those people, they're just kind of going blur, right? And sometimes you're forced to start the conversation further down the track than you want to. What I then have to do, I always go back and tick off all the points that I've done. When I've got excited about someone, I've had people go, oh, Pete, I've heard about this and I've heard about you and I really want to do this. My conversion rates suck and I really need help with this. I know a friend of mine who's doubled their conversion rate in like 3 weeks and like I go, okay, great, 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 great. And I miss all those points beforehand. I get an objection at the end, right? Don't get caught up by their excitement or their dumping. Make sure you've ticked up all your boxes. So the first A is acknowledge. Now, what I didn't do, and I wanted to save it for this session, I'll bring it up now. What I didn't do in your workbook is go through the three A's with you on Monday. The first A is to acknowledge the level of entry of your consumer in the conversation. So acknowledging could be acknowledging their tonality. Is it fast? Is it soft? Is it loud? Is it certain? Is it uncertain? Acknowledge background noises. One of the biggest ways to lower resistance is I'll beat someone on the phone and say, listen, it sounds like you're in the car, Mike. Yeah, I'm actually just driving, just in the car. I'm on the way to pick up the kids from school. And like just them volunteering that information gives you something to talk about. So I'll acknowledge background noises, work sites, children, outdoors, indoors, driving in the car. I'll acknowledge, I had someone who was a real like shit. They're like, yeah, hi, Pete. I was like, hey, I just noticing like, is everything okay? Because you sound a bit frustrated. Oh, mate, sorry, it's not you. I just had a client I got off the phone with and it's just I'm dealing with some drama at the moment. I will call people on their bullshit. Never accept any negativity on a call. Acknowledge, the more you can acknowledge the scenario, the situation, the tone, the type of language, the more you will lower buyer's resistance. Does that resonate? So critical. The first day is just imperative to acknowledge that entry point. Sean, question.
But do you buy into that, mate? Like, you know, I just this morning had one where a client had exactly that scenario. You could, you know, sense it in his voice. And I said to him, what's happening, mate? He's sitting a bit down. And he's unloaded on me and told me what's going on. I've actually had some similar scenarios in the past week or so, similar businesses. Do we buy into it as a conversation point to get some commonality, or do we just, mate, sorry, you're feeling that way, and move through it?
Perfect question.